Hey, this is Steli Efti.
And this is Heaton Shah.
And in today's recording of The Startup Chat, we're going to talk about the art of trusting others to do the work.
I think we like talking about more than just sales and marketing.
We just want to bullshit and chat about business and life. And hopefully, while we're doing that, provide a lot of value to people.
The world's best business podcast.
Oh, shit. We got it.
For people trying to get shit done.
Yeah. We don't want to give you feedback that's bullshit.
Yeah, we want you to do your best.
Another way of saying this is to make the transition from maker to manager. Whenever you have to stop doing the work and show other people how to do it or let others take over from you, that's basically it.
Yeah, so your business is scaling. The scenario is your business is scaling. There's a bunch of stuff that you're doing, or even maybe your co-founder in your company is doing, or somebody, you know, early team member. And at some point, they shouldn't be doing that stuff. You shouldn't be doing the things you're doing and someone else should be doing it, but it can be a very sort of difficult transition. And so we want to talk a little bit more about how do you go through that transition and when you should do it, why you should do it, what are the things you should do it with?
Yeah, the reason why we wanted to talk about this is that we just did an AMA session on Slack. And we had somebody asking, hey, you know, I'm very passionate about my product and business. I've been able to gather a lot of, you know, excitement in the market and get people to agree to be customers of it. But now I'm afraid that others won't be able to, you know, share that same excitement and get as the same results that I'm getting. How do I do that? I think both Heaton and I kind of, you could sum up our answers in like, just trust other people to do it.
Yeah.
And then I think her comeback was, well, but you know, they're not going to do it the same way I do it.
Yeah.
And our comeback was they shouldn't.
Yeah, right? That's not the point.
That is not the point, yeah. Right? If you're, in the early days, I do think that nobody sells, there's something special, magical about the founders talking about their product, right? Because they are the most involved, probably the most knowledgeable about it to some extent. There's kind of a special thing around the relationship of the creators of the thing. So when they talk about it, they talk about it from a different place. But at the same time, in the early days, there's probably nothing, no brand, no product, no customers, no nothing. And a few weeks, a few months down the line, hopefully you're at a different point now. Your product is much more mature. You have a little bit of a brand. You have some customers. So now it should be slightly easier to get more customers. And at this point, it should be possible for others to be, you know, passionate in their own way about what you do and in a way that is going to be successful with getting others to want to buy into the vision. But I think that at the crux of this, there's trust, but there's also this like art of letting go, right? You've been very, very involved, and that probably was part of why this has worked so far. So now you need to let go of that and give it to other people. And I think that's just something that everybody struggles with. I think it's a universal struggle that I see, like letting go of the doing what got you here so that you can get there, right? So do you have any kind of process or framework that you use whenever you go from like being hands-on involved on something to like getting to hands-off and transitioning it off to other people? Do you have kind of a framework that you use for that?
The most interesting thing I can say about this is that this was a few years ago when I think Jack Dorsey said, basically, I'm an editor in my company, right? Or in my company. And so that really comes to mind. And since he said that, I started using the terminology a lot more. So basically, I try to think about like early on in a company, there's editing and there's creating. Let's just like divide things up into that as a framework.
Yeah.
And so in the beginning, early on, there's not that many people, and you as a founder might be creating a lot of things. And then at some point, let's say creating means like you're creating the website, you're creating the marketing message on it, you're creating the sales scripts, you're creating the emails, right? And the best thing I've found when somebody says, I don't know if someone else can do it as well as I am, or I can, or they won't do it as well. I say, well, what you want to do is you want to hire people and then create an opportunity where you become the editor and they become the creator. That way, every time they do something, especially like, let's say you just hired somebody. So you hired a new sales rep or two new sales reps, because that's probably how you'd suggest to do it if you were the one selling. If you hired two new sales reps, you've been doing all the sales. but there's emails they need to send and all these things they need to do all the time. So one approach you could take is for the first few days or first week, they write everything up in drafts, right? If it's a lot of emailing, and they send it to you and you just give them feedback on it. And then with that approach, if you do enough editing in the first period of time, let's say the first week that they joined, you'll be able to figure out, like, can they do it as well as me? Do they take the feedback that I'm giving them? Do they understand it? And what I'd be looking for in that scenario where you have a couple salespeople and you've been doing all the sales, it's kind of working, is by the end of it, are they coming up with things that are better than you? Are they coming up with their own version of these things? Are you looking at it and being like, oh, why didn't I think of that? Or, oh, I wouldn't have done that, but I have nothing against that thing, right? Yeah. And so you're just really trying to assess really quickly is how can you coach somebody as an editor versus having to always go in and create. And I'll share one other thing that I found really awesome. Keith Raboy from a lot of companies, but PayPal and then Square and a bunch of stuff in the middle, Slide and a bunch of stuff in the middle. And now he's an investor over at Khosla Ventures. He has this great video at Startup School, Y Combinator Startup School, that Sam Altman did. And he says, some people think I'm a micromanager and some people think I'm not. And the TLDR of why is basically that he comes to is basically that I'll do whatever's needed for that team member and what we need to accomplish, right? And what they need to accomplish for the organization. And sometimes some team member needs to be micromanaged because that's just what it takes. So what I'm talking about of editing is essentially a form of micromanagement, right? Where you're editing all their work. But if you want to guarantee that it's somebody you want on the team, and ideally they can do it better than you, if not as good as you, then that's the way to do it.
Yeah.
And you know, the one area we've done this in recently at our companies is we've needed to scale customer support at Crazy Egg. And everyone that comes in, they write a lot of emails, they draft them up. The people that have been doing it for years, they look at them, give feedback. And over time, these people either learn or they don't. And if they don't learn, they don't stay.
Yeah. I love that the framework of, you know, some people think I'm a micromanager, some people don't. Yeah. I love that because it speaks to the, I do whatever is necessary in that given context with those people versus a way of doing it. And then everybody that falls
and
into
it.
Yeah, yeah, yes. And honestly, that's something I still struggle with. So I have a particular style of doing things, right?
We all do.
Right? Yeah. Yes. And whenever somebody doesn't conform with that style, even when I recognize it, it takes a lot of effort for me to customize my approach to what will be best for them versus just doing the way I do things, even if it doesn't create the necessary results, right? And and so that's definitely something that's on my mind. It's like, okay.
Have you ever thought of it like advice? So you give a lot of advice.
Yeah.
Just think of it as like advice. Yeah. That's what I do.
Yeah.
So if somebody from our team comes along and they're like, oh, look at this, or I want to talk about this, I just go back to advice mode and say, if this were somebody I don't know, how would I give them advice? And it wouldn't necessarily be with my way.
Yeah.
And I know that's hard to do when it's your company and the one you started, but I just try to give them advice.
Yeah, I have improved it at this. Yeah. In general, one interesting thing that I noticed just over the last 2 years or so is that the typical way that I would coach somebody or train somebody was to, you know, I'll set a very high standard and then I will critique everything that doesn't fit that standard. And I'll be very brutally honest.
Yeah.
I'm never hurtful, but I'm never like leaning back.
Letting
it go. You know, if you did something and there's 40 things to critique about it, I'll give you the entire list immediately. And that's also the way I like to be treated. But I was just, what I realized with that approach sometimes is that, not sometimes, I think that most of the time is that you overwhelm people, right? It's not really, to most people I've found, it's not really useful to be critiqued at all the things they do. But
So you might be going overboard.
Yeah.
Right. You're that editor that wants to change all the words blog posts
and
you're editing it.
And it's also like you're not prioritizing them.
That's right.
Right? You're just critiquing everything versus stepping back and going, what's the most important thing that needs changing here? Let's talk about the overall story versus this comma setting or something.
And when you critique everything like that and it's like 40 things, and then you're not even doing your job. If you're trying to get out of the job.
Yeah. Right. You're not very thoughtful about it. You just, whatever comes to mind.
And I don't think that's advice.
No.
I think that's just giving them a whole list of things that you would that you would have done if you did it.
Yes.
Versus that realizing that they have to continually do this going forward.
Yeah.
They're going to have their own style.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, I think for me, it's about identifying, and it's tough. It's really tough because I look at stuff even from our team and I'm like, this is shit. Right. And then I got to think and I'm like, how can I say this? And I'm saying it like that. Yeah. We're giving them a 40-point list. Right. Yeah. You know what inevitably happens usually? If I wait. Usually I don't wait on emails, but if I wait like a few hours or a day, something will change. So that's been like, oh, I updated it or I added this. That's interesting, that's right? Interesting. So I'm looking for these indicators, right? Or another thing happens, which is it clicks for me as to what is the core piece of feedback that I can give them that would change their whole approach to it if that's what I need them to do.
Yeah.
Right? While just telling them all these things I do differently are not the same as, oh, you must have thought when you started this project, X, Y, and Z, but it's not like that. So I almost go back to why would they write it like this? Why would they do it like this? And try to understand what caused this and then go hit on that. Because even advice, right? If someone should be selling to SMBs, but they're selling to enterprise, there's a very simple reason that they made that decision. And if you can get to the root cause of it, then they'll change on their own and they'll decide, oh, I should be targeting SMBs, not enterprise. And so I think in the same scenario, if there's someone on your team and they did something where you need 40 points of feedback or you feel like it, it's probably because they misunderstood something usually, you know, earlier on, or they're just always going to misunderstand things.
Yeah, I think that's been probably the biggest change that that I've made is to really step back and always ask what is the number one priority we need to focus on, and really making sure that I focus my feedback on one thing and my energy when I work with people until they've mastered that one thing or we've come to an agreement or we're on the same page on it, and then ask myself, what is the next most important thing? That. And that has made a big difference in both progressing, and I do see a lot of times how at times, especially when it came to selling, like when we hired salespeople and I would give salespeople feedback on their calls, I just see a million things that are like imperfect or could be done better. Today, you know, when we have like junior salespeople and they go, hey, here's a sales call, can you give me feedback on this? Like back in the, or we had this case recently where we have a new salesperson that joined and she was negotiating on some kind of discount and she said, how should I have negotiated better? And back in the day, like 2 years ago, I would have given her a whole like negotiation seminar basically in a box in like 15 minutes and overwhelmed her. And this time I was like, listen, negotiation right now is not the focus. Like what you did is not perfect, can be done better, but right now it's good enough. Because what we really want to focus on is X, right? Exactly. So let's focus on that.
And that's redirecting them.
Yes. And then you could immediately sense that she was like relieved. Okay, it doesn't matter. I did well enough. There's more to learn here, but not now. Let me focus back on this other thing. So the results have been, you know, significantly different.
What you just did there, though, is just reprioritize.
Yeah.
Right? And instead of trying to teach at every moment.
Yeah.
Right? And that's a balance.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Usually you want to teach at every moment. You're like, oh, she could get better at this. Let's go. Right? Yeah. And instead it's like, wait, how do I make sure she's working on the most important thing? And the most important part of improvement.
Yeah. The other thing is, I think that we are all, it's hard for most people to differentiate between this was not done the way I would do it versus it's not done well, right? Yeah. I think that's so challenging.
So how do you do it?
I like that one. Yeah, I don't know. I think that I don't know. You know, that's a great question. I know that
you're not creating robots.
Yeah.
So I think that approach of they have to do it the way I would do it leads to robots.
Yeah. I think that, again, it goes back to thoughtfulness, mindfulness, like asking yourself, you've done it before, right? And you did it in a way you liked it or that generated some good results. So this is now your template for your standard, your template for success, the way that you know how it works. So when somebody else does it and it doesn't look identical, I think it's just intuitively and impulsively easy to think it's not right. I don't know what happened over the last few years that allowed me to kind of move on a little bit, and still a process. But today, I don't expect people to think the way I do or to do something exactly the way I do. Because the question is this, or the question that I ask myself when I look at people's work is, forget about the details. Is this at its core great, or did this generate good results, right? Or another question is, am I truly sure that doing it differently would create different results in this case? And this allows me to oftentimes say, no, I'm not sure, or no, I think this is actually generating the same exact results. So why do I care then?
You actually hit on a key question that I like to ask if I'm confused. Super easy, works every time. All you got to ask is, what was the goal of what you were trying to do with that? And if you just ask that, if you're confused about the outcome, you end up getting a lot of clarity on why they made the decisions that led to the product or the thing you're seeing in front of you.
Yeah. The other thing, I just last week I was in Warsaw in Poland. I was talking to a founder that had like a small team, like 10 people. And he was like, basically without complaining about it, the entire lunch that we had, he was complaining about his people, right? And this is a common, like this is a common secret amongst founders. A lot of like business owners will constantly complain about the people that work for them, right? Maybe it's like parents complaining about their children once they're at a certain age, standard thing. And really, I had this one thought in my mind that popped up during that discussion, which was, and I told him, I was like, listen, the people that work for you may not be the people you like to work for you, but they're the people you deserve working for you, right? It's like, and this is from some quote somewhere, it's like the people in your life might not be the ones you like, but they are the ones you deserve. There's a reason why these people work for you. And it's either because you hired them, you chose them, you're managing them or leading them in a way that generates results you're unhappy with, but you ultimately are responsible for that. You're responsible for all these people. And if there's frustration with some of the things they do, then you need to ask yourself, you know, who is ultimately responsible for it, which is yourself, right? And there's another little anecdote on this. This many years ago, I heard this from like a super hardcore sales manager who, you know, drove to headquarters to the founder, billionaire guy of the business he was working for, and started complaining about his leadership team. He was complaining about them and really angry about some big mistake they made and something they fucked up. And the founder, this billionaire guy, was like, all right, just listening very carefully, very attentively. And at the end, he was like, all right, let's do this. Tell me who was the fucking idiot who hired these people and I'll fire him first thing. And then let's talk about all the next steps we have to take, right? And that was the moment he just stood up and left the office of the guy because like,
He was the one that hired all those idiots and he's complaining like, about.
He's like,
oh, that's classic.
He's like, okay, I'm out of here. I got it. I got the message. I should shut the fuck up and fix my problems versus complaining about others. But yeah, I do think that it's an important thing to realize that, you know, as you hire and grow and cultivate a team, and as you give up on work that you've been doing yourself, you chose these people. You showed them what to do and how to do. You're editing them. So you need to take on all ownership over the results that you see there, especially if you're not happy about something. And you need to ask yourself.
You can change it.
You can change it. You have full influence over it.
If you're complaining, you're probably looking for change.
Yeah.
That's usually what I've noticed.
Yeah. So we talked about like the, well, maybe this is not really sequentially the way we did it, but still thinking about like all the important questions to ask. When does somebody know when to let go of work or not? Because that's something I hear a lot. People asking, hey, when should we hire the first people to do the work that we're currently doing?
It's probably a super tactical thing of just listing out all the things your company is doing by person.
Mm.
And then you might just have a crazy realization just by taking every person on your team and just listing out what they're responsible for every week or every month or every day or just in general, right? Just list that out for me. Do me a favor. If you are listening right now and you're wondering whether you're trying to scale, just list out what everyone does by name. And then it gets interesting because oftentimes, here's why, and I do the same thing even when people leave.
Mm.
What were they doing? Now, here's why. I love this one. In both of these scenarios, when you're trying to scale and when people are leaving, there's one fundamental thing that's going on. Things that are getting done are either not going to be done anymore. That's when someone leaves. Or things that are getting done will not be able to be done the same way. And but it's fundamentally the same thing.
Yeah.
You're hiring new people to do these things or you're trying to get these things done. So in the scenario when you leave, when someone leaves, just to bring it back home. Anyways, someone's wondering. But anyways, when people leave, oftentimes it's like, let's replace the person, right?
Yeah.
But when people leave, what you're really trying to do is figure out the tasks they were doing. Because it's your opportunity for a redistribution. Can we give those tasks to other people? Do we need to hire that same type of person again?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So in the same way, right? If you're sitting there and you're like, oh, I need to scale, you're thinking of hiring more people. But first, you should audit what exactly is going on. And then you might have a whole different perspective on who you hire and what you hire them for, which could even prevent this whole scenario of you hire someone and you're not happy with their work.
I fucking love this. And this is your tip for the episode today.
It is
pure fucking gold. So I'm going to add something to it as my tip, right? So I love the idea of like writing down the names of all the people in the team and what they are doing, what they're responsible for. But what I would do is one thing as an additional thing is write down, you know, what are the things that they're clearly responsible for, but what is everything they touch or work on? And then what I would look at is, are there areas in the business that lots of people touch, but nobody's clearly responsible for?
Yeah.
Right? Because that's also a very good indicator that you might want to hire somebody for that. Oh, you know, this person, they all are also monitoring our whatever Twitter account and our social media marketing, and they all touch all these various broad areas of the business, but nobody's the one person that owns that, right? No. So being able to map the activities in the company to who owns them, and then also discover the areas nobody owns.
That's right.
Because those are usually the areas where you have to ask yourself one of two questions. Number one, is it worth doing at all right now? Is this an area that we can just kill?
Yeah.
Because the reason nobody owns it is it's not important. So we should just stop having people work on this.
Yeah.
Or do we fucking need somebody to own it? Is it a really crucial area and it's not progressing well enough because nobody fully owns it?
And you can see how this applies to both situations. I know we're talking about scaling and hiring more people and working yourself out of some of these jobs, but it totally applies when someone leaves because they're extracted out. And now you have all these tasks they were doing.
Yeah.
It's about the tasks. It's about what you're trying to get done. It's not about more people or less people.
Or less people for that matter. I love that. And as a final note, I remember having an employee that was like, so Heaton is getting like text messages and texting back and forth.
About you.
About me.
Someone's listening to the podcast right now that I just introduced to it.
Okay.
Anyways, we'll catch that.
I was wondering about various entertaining things about my personality. So we had a team member once and she was just amazing at scaling things. And one framework she used, and this is an old hack, I don't know where it comes from, but it's fairly well known, but I like it as a framework for founders, is like constantly asking yourself, how can I fire myself from doing this?
Yeah. Right?
And this really applies to any type of work. As a founder, you need to ask yourself, how can I fire myself from doing marketing, from doing sales, from doing this, from doing that?
I'm going to end with this because this is a good episode. It's done. There's going to be a few links, but one link I'm going to add is one of the best managers I've ever worked with and I continue to work with, he wrote a post about working yourself out of a job when you're in a job and just constantly, how do you think about leveling up and making it so that you do something and then someone else ends up doing it later, but you've set it up so they can do that so you can go do something else, which is essentially what a good founder, CEO, even leader in a company would do if they had to. So we'll add that in here because it keeps coming up, work yourself out of a job. So there's a whole post on how you can think about it and it applies to this whole, you know, when should you hire more people and stuff like that.
Awesome. So, cool. That's it from us.
All right. See ya.
See ya.